Every day, Zach and I worked in the honey house. August and Zach had already extracted most of the honey from her bee yards, but there were still several stacks of supers on pallets sitting around. We ran the warmer and caught the wax in a tin tub, then loaded the frames into the extractor and filtered the honey through brand new nylon hose. August liked to keep a little pollen in her honey because it was good for people, so we saw to that too. Sometimes we broke off pieces of comb and pushed them down into the jars before we filled them. You had to make sure they were new combs with no brood eggs in them, since nobody wanted to have baby bee larvae in their honey. And if we weren't doing all that, we were filling candle molds with beeswax and washing mason jars till my hands turned stiff as corn husk from detergent. The only part of the day I dreaded was dinner, when I had to be around June. You'd think anybody who played music for dying people would be a nicer person. I couldn't understand why she resented me so much. Somehow, even me being white and imposing on their hospitality didn't seem enough reason.
"How are things coming with you, Lily?"
she'd say every night at the table, like she'd rehearsed this in the mirror. I'd say, "Things are coming fine, and how are they coming with you, June?" She would glance at August, who would be following all this like she was overcome with interest. "Fine," June would say. Having gotten that out of the way, we would shake out our napkins and do our best to ignore each other the rest of the meal. I knew that August was trying to correct June's rudeness toward me, but I wanted to say to her, "Do you think me and June Boatwright give a damn how each other is coming? Just give up." One night after the Hail Marys, August said, "Lily, if you wish to touch our lady's heart, you're welcome. Isn't she, June?" I glanced at June, who gave me a forced smile. "Maybe some other time," I said. "I'm here to tell you, if I was dying on my cot in the honey house and the only thing that could save me was June's change of heart, I would meet my death and shoot straight to heaven. Or maybe hell, I wasn't even sure anymore." The best meal was lunch, which Zach and I ate under the cool of the pine trees. May fixed us bologna sandwiches nearly every single day. We could also count on candlestick salad, which meant half a banana standing up in a pineapple slice. "Let me light your candle," she'd say, and strike an imaginary match. Then she'd fasten a bottled cherry on the tip of the banana with the toothpick. Like Zach and I were still in kindergarten. But we'd go along with her, acting all excited over her lighting the banana. For dessert, we crunched cubes of lime Kool-Aid, which she'd frozen in ice trays. One day, we sat on the grass after lunch, listening to the wind snap the sheets Rosaline had hung on the clothesline. "What's your favorite subject in school?" Zach asked. "English."
"I bet you like to write themes,"
he said, rolling his eyes. "As a matter of fact, I do. I was planning on being a writer and an English teacher in my spare time."
"Was planning?" he said.
"I don't think I have much of a future now, being an orphan."
What I meant was being a fugitive from the law. Considering the state of things, I didn't know if I'd even get back to high school.
He studied his fingers. I could smell the sharp scent of his sweat. He had patches of honey on his shirt, which were attracting a horde of flies and causing him to swat incessantly. After a while, he said, "Me either."
"You either what?"
"I don't know if I'll have much of a future either."
"Why not? You're not an orphan."
"No," he said. "I'm a Negro." I felt embarrassed.
"Well, you could play football for a college team and then be a professional player."
"Why is it sports is the only thing white people see us being successful at? I don't want to play football," he said. "I want to be a lawyer."
"That's fine with me," I said, a little annoyed. "I've just never heard of a Negro lawyer, that's all. You've got to hear of these things before you can imagine them."
"Bullshit. You gotta imagine what's never been." I closed my eyes. "All right, then. I'm imagining a Negro lawyer. You are a Negro Perry Mason. People are coming to you from all over the state,
wrong accused people, and you get at the truth at the very last minute by tricking the real criminal on the witness stand. Yeah, he said, I'll bust their ass with the truth. When he laughed, his tongue was grass green from Kool-Aid. I started calling him Zack the Ass-Busting Lawyer. Oh, look who's here, Zack the Ass-Busting Lawyer, I'd say.